What's up, y'all? You are listening to the Chain Reaction Podcast. I am your host, Jeremiah Mitchell, joined today by Jeremiah Harding. How's it going, sir? Good to see you.
Reasonable. Yeah, I'm still in this position, of course, because I haven't figured out my room yet, but the positions will be figured out by tomorrow because I'm going to actually start my daily vlog tomorrow. It's going to be Monday to Friday. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. It was a long weekend. It was good. We had fun. It stayed with my in-laws, kind of extended family in-laws for a Christmas thing at a large Airbnb house. So I had some interesting conversations, but kind of feels good to be home away from 3 days of that. I like about, 4 hour kind of parties, and then I like being able to depart and go do something else.
Yeah.
But enjoyed my time, had fun hanging out with little kids and watched my boy interact with other kids. I don't know. Feeling a little bit like I just want to lay on the couch for 5 hours and chill. Recover a bit. Recover from vacation. I don't know if you ever feel that way, but
yeah, well, I mean, when I get the chance to chill at other places, a lot of the time it doesn't turn into chilling, and it turns into like high energy, like sort of, and it's not bad, but it's like it's not relaxing either. Like I've learned that recently. I gotta let myself relax occasionally, because if I don't, I'm just gonna fucking implode. Like when I
are you feeling that way today?
Well, no, because I slept till 1.
All right.
Because it's, I don't know, when I get the chance to do that sort of thing, I do. Because, like, I try to spend as much of my days working as possible, like trying to spread my influence and do research and shit like that. And now that I'm making content, it's just going to be another thing to add to my list of things to do. So I'm probably going to have to pull a Jordan Peterson and start making lists of things to do in my life and then checking them off every day. I don't let myself relax a whole lot. And I know, like, intellectually that it's not a healthy choice to make. It's less that I feel bad, and it's more that I know it's not healthy intellectually. And, what I do feel is probably, like, because I'm used to it, not because it's actually healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of times in the moment when you're not being super forward-thinking, you're just thinking about what's next ahead of you. Relaxing doesn't make the most sense. It doesn't seem to be the most reasonable if you're just thinking about the next thing that you have to do. Whereas if you're thinking
right,
longer term, and even just about what you really want your life to be like and what you want your internal emotional life to be like, sometimes then it seems like chilling sometimes is the most reasonable decision. But I do understand that kind of being stuck in this pattern of busyness and not getting out and not really wanting to get out, because there is something about it that's appealing. Behavior can seem like it's productive and life-giving. And then that doesn't mean it isn't productive. It's just not necessarily as productive or as productive in the direction you want as a life that includes relaxation and recovery and recharging as a part of a regular practice.
Right. And so that's sort of like one of the reasons I try to practice martial arts, like at least, twice a week with somebody else, instead of just doing like solo drills at home, because like then it's more of a social experience. I get a walk in every day at this point. I try to get out of the house, because if I don't, my brain gets very focused on the world inside the computer and very unfocused on the world that the computer is supposed to represent. And it's a very distorted picture of the world. It's not very like representative of reality. So like it puts people's brain in a very unhealthy spot.
It definitely can, like you're saying. It's not the way our brain originally developed to function in the world.
Right, because it's not the world. It's like right. It's like an exaggerated cartoon version of the world that everybody tries to put on their best face for or their worst face for, depending on, like, you know, what kind of thing they're trying to accomplish with their presence online. And, you know, even the most, like, washed out, boring corporate bullshit is still trying to make it itself seem better than the other people, even if it's, like, really not fucking whatever.
Yeah.
Life,
I mean,
is bullshit if you don't try to live it. If you just try to work, it's not going to be good.
Yeah, technology is at its best when it's connecting with us with the world in a different and, like, more expansive ways and in new ways. It's not at its best when it's replacing our world. You know, that's when it becomes, I think, self-destructive in a sense. That might be an hyperbolic term, but it, right, that's when it disconnects us from the reality of the real world, which I think in many ways can kind of disconnect us from ourselves.
Which, of course, you know, then the whole, like, well, technology is now getting to the point where you can strap on a VR helmet and, like, just completely absorb into a world. And Elon Musk is, you know, for those who don't know, SpaceX guy, very, very, very smart. He made the point that it's very unlikely that we're in base reality. It's very unlikely that we're not experiencing some part of virtual reality right now. And that's what's real crazy to think about, because, like, it's to the point where we can, like, go into an alternate universe and feel like we're there. It's photorealistic. There are even, like the modern versions of smell-o-vision. There's real dolls for your fucking experience, and it's, you know,
your intimate connections.
Yeah, it's very unlikely that this is the only reality, or that this is the base reality. And, you know, that's what's real crazy to think about. You start thinking about what technology can represent, and then you realize that it could have represented this at any point, and possibly is already representing this, and maybe we're just Sims in somebody else's PC.
Yeah, that seems like just something that people kind of made up when technology advanced to the point where they could think about stuff like that, but I'm not an expert. I just doubt.
Well, I doubt it too.
I seriously doubt that is the case, especially since it really just seems like an idea that came into someone's head because of the advances in technology in our world that allowed them to imagine that and say, oh, this stuff kind of fits the same pattern, but it's more likely, I would think, that the pattern that was developed to imitate the real world is what is reflective of the real world. Not that our modern simulation technology and programming is similar, you know, to the technology and programming used to create this false reality that we're all living in. But, let's move on. You good with it? Because I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't think anyone does, really. Do you, government shutdown. FYI, it's January 21st, 2018, and I think it was Friday. We had a government shutdown, which means absolutely nothing.
Well, yeah, I mean, because the government services that shut down are non-essential, which is always fun to hear, because it's like, oh, they're non-essential, then why were they fucking there?
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe because somebody needed a bribe to sign a bill.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of the worst part about the non-essential employees is that if the government shut down, I would rather they keep all the non-essential employees going and make the essential ones take time off without pay, because they're the ones doing the worst shit. It's not the non-essentials that are the real danger to the minds of children, or to arresting people for selling a plant, or murdering people overseas, or making laws, you know, sitting down writing words on paper, calling them laws. Those are considered the essential employees, all the ones committing the most amount of evil. You know, keep the secretaries there taking phone calls. I don't care.
Right, like, and everybody's calling it a shutdown, as though the government itself is shutting down. And, of course, that's probably going to prompt the idiots of the world to break the law in like, a well, the government's consideration of law in huge amount more proportions. So I'm thinking that the government shutdown also doubles as a government revenue collection stream, because now there's a bunch of idiots doing things that they, you know, think they can get away with in this context, and probably being fined and cited and arrested and shit in very large numbers for it.
I guess my tendency is to think that most people aren't that dumb. I'd be interested if you could, if you had a moment at some point, if you could research like the last government shutdown and see if the numbers went up. Because I think it shut down in 2013.
Yeah.
If you find anything, it'd be interesting. I think, yeah, it doesn't shut down in any of the good ways. That's for sure. It's just a term used to scare people into thinking that they're in danger and we need to get a new spending bill passed and increase the deficit, as if that means anything. I mean, there's increase the debt ceiling limit. I mean, there's been a debt ceiling limit that's been increased, I don't know, five times over the last 10 years or something crazy like that. So it's just an arbitrary number. Why even have one if all you ever do is raise it?
Well, that's exactly what the number is there for. It's there to be arbitrary so that in between periods of raising it, people can develop security, a feeling of security when they look at that number. Even though it's going to be raised next time, they can say, well, it hasn't raised for years. It hasn't raised for years. And then when it raises, they can say, shit, it raised. Well, maybe that's kind of bad. Yeah. But then they can settle back into the routine of saying, well, it hasn't raised for years. It hasn't raised for years. And, you know, people don't, that's the thing. People don't look into things like the Overton window, where people can, like, pull the most extreme shit so that the plan that they really want to achieve is, you know, something that it'll fall to when they compromise. I stayed through maybe 8 minutes of this woman's 86, I think, minute Periscope stream, where she was saying, like, the Democrats are holding people hostage, are holding our military hostage. And she was very slow about it and saying all this shit, very deliberate.
They all like to pretend that someone's violating the NAP, which is what that would be. They want to frame their moral argument for getting people to do what they want and talk as if the NAP is being violated in some way. They don't say it in those terms, you know, but if they really were holding people hostage, you know, then it would be violation of the non-aggression principle, because appealing to violations of that does something to people. It sort of incites them. It gets them emotionally attached because they know, oh, if they holding someone hostage is really, really evil. So then they use these terms that are, like you're probably about to say when I interrupted you, 100% false. No one is holding the military hostage by not passing a new spending bill.
Well, I wish people were holding the military hostage. That would be great. Then they couldn't bomb civilians and, you know, invade foreign countries for the interests of corporations.
Agreed.
You know, if people were actually holding the military hostage, like, authentically, they wouldn't still be over there. All operations would have stopped. They would have, you know, probably had like a joint session of Congress to like wage war on whoever was holding them hostage. Nobody's holding the military hostage. What they're doing is they're saying, you know, until we get our way, you won't get yours. And that's, you know, standard gridlock. Republicans have been responsible for gridlock before too. Democrats will be responsible for gridlock when it suits them. Gridlock is fucking normal and usual, and people who claim that it's so unusual are only doing it because their side isn't the one being favored by the current bit of gridlock. It's just partisan like bickering, and it's designed to get people to polarize themselves so that when the decision is finally made, everybody's on board because it fits like their particular like mentality. Either your side won and that's the way it should be, or your side lost and it's more impetus to keep on going and fighting harder and harder. And by fighting, I use that term extremely loosely because it's mostly just bitching about it on the internet so that people don't revolt, you know, so that all their energy is used up so that they can't do jack shit about any actual problems.
Yeah, you get people all up in arms and spending, like you're saying, time and energy and mental space discussing things like a government shutdown and insignificant differences relatively in present and future spending and in what your budget's going to be. And what it does primarily, this kind of a fear language and holding out and stuff, it allows both Democrats and Republicans to appeal to their base and make claims about the victories they had in the various bills. Oh, you know, we were able to over the next 10 years, you know, cut the spending increases by $500 billion from what the spending increases would have been otherwise, or we were able to raise the military budget, or we were able to get, you know, this organization, or get this part of the law passed that, you know, funds Planned Parenthood for X number of years and X number of dollars. Like, it allows everyone to go back to their constituents and say, look, I won. We did this, you know, I fought for this and I got it. And in the end, it's just vapor. It's nothing. Nothing
Well,
substantive.
right.
And nothing substantive has changed. It's this dog and pony show that people that it's happened, you know, I don't know. I've been paying attention for a decade, and it happens every few years where there's talk of increasing spending, you know, getting a budget passed. It's amazing that people still believe that there are Republicans that want to cut spending. There are probably a few, but the vast majority have zero interest in doing so, and they just get the wool pulled over their eyes over and over and over again. And as I've talked about on the show before, I think the sense of hopelessness. Well, if I don't trust that these people will successfully decrease spending, then where else do I turn? What else can I do? Nothing. Well, I'm gonna have to just keep trusting this dumbass process then.
Well, and it's, you know, it's slightly more insidious than that too, because the broader the government grows, the broader the scope of their power and abilities, the more they have to maintain a baseline of the status quo, and the bigger the status quo baseline becomes, because essentially, you know, they have to promise better treatment of health care. They have to promise better treatment of veterans, welfare recipients, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Trump promised this because he said essentially that we're going to kick all these illegal immigrants out and that's going to solve the entirety of the welfare problem. But, you know, and Obama said, well, we're going to solve this problem by being kinder to these people. But also, all of his spending bills involving them also happen to benefit the average American person. So, you know, the fact
Being
that
kinder to the immigrants, you're saying?
like
Yeah.
DACA, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
Well, and let's be clear about what Obama did. He also deported more immigrants than Bush during that
right.
time. You know, it's
But
like,
it's
do this
because the
on one hand
immigrants
and
are
this on the
foreign
other.
policy pawns.
Yeah, can be. Depends on which ones.
Well, I mean, all of them, to be honest. I mean, the reason Trump, like, if he said shitholes, which I still doubt, but if he said shitholes, if he used that term to describe those countries, it's because that term was already in the lexicon. I, you know, the idea that Obama was just a kind and loving sweetheart who could never do no wrong is the sort of racism that you get these days. It's not, it's coded racism against both black and white people, because what it says is that you can't, you know, if you're black, you can't do anything wrong. You're just an innocent little puppy dog. And we should all just say that, you know, basically you're not human enough to do anything wrong. You don't have that fundamental impetus for evil in you. And if you're white, you are the evil. You are that fundamental impetus because you are part of the power structure that they've grown to hate. Not like the whole thing, not the entire power structure, but specifically the power structure that they've grown to hate, which is one that they're not in control of. And by they, I mean like the left and their like SJW constituents. But now you have the reverse of the Obama paradigm, where people are claiming that President Trump saying something like shithole is, you know, racist because he's essentially because he's white and not because of any other reason. Because, you know, you can bomb places, you can loot their coffers in the form of the Clinton Foundation, you can turn places that are full of brown people into shitholes, but to call them shitholes, that's the racist thing. That's one step too far. So what Obama didn't do, if he did do this, if Trump did call them shitholes, what Obama didn't do is he didn't use the naughty word. That's all. That's specifically it. He still bombed places. He still killed an Arab, two Arab Americans without any trial or charges, because essentially, like, he didn't like what the guy was saying. And he, you know, eventually later killed the boy's sister too, because she was still over there. So like three Americans of the same family dead because like a president that's so-called not racist used racist, xenophobic and jingoistic policies to bomb them to death. And that's just the Americans. And so we end up with this idea of my president is better than your president because the window is constantly moving. And that's the reason bipartisanship is so effective at maintaining the status quo, because all you've got to do, and that's just one example, the racism, because all you've got to do is just shift back and forth from one to the other, and you can maintain whatever status quo you want as long as it still like has some sort of power structure in both parties. And that's exactly what happened here. Like, it's just a spending bill. It's just the same as any other. And it's the same gridlock that Democrats did, or sorry, that Republicans did with the Democrats spending bills under Obama. It's what the fuck happened. But they can always treat it like something new, because it's essentially the part and parcel of partisan politics to say, hey, our side is going to be better and we can prove it. And then they spend all this time grasping at straws trying to prove it, and none of it being personally accountable or reflective to realize how full of shit they are.
Yeah, I tend to disagree with you on the racist stuff in terms of people thinking it's just Obama's skin color that makes him unable to do anything wrong, and Trump's skin color makes him racist. I tend to see more of that as just kind of like media bias and the bias of the left, where with Obama, I mean, they always try to downplay Democrats' wrongdoings and ignore them and pretend they were insignificant. I mean, I still remember the Clinton years when they're like, yeah, he had sex with a bunch of women, but he's such a great president. That should have nothing to do with who he is in office, you know, who is a very white dude who could also seemingly do no wrong, or the wrongs he did do, they said, oh, they're unrelated to him being president, is what the Democrats were saying, you know, back then. Whereas they do the exact opposite with Trump, you know, on things. And he does seem like he's a slob and not really someone that I would want being around any woman that I cared about, because I think he's probably, it does not really treat them respectfully, given some of the conversations I've heard have with others. But he gets, when he, for they want to they want to impeach him for doing things far less significant and far further away from his presidency than Clinton did. And I don't think it really is necessarily a skin color thing. And they defended Hillary too. They're always looking to criticize the Republicans in power.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, before, there wasn't a black president to look at. And then when there was, literally all these social justice warriors started cropping up because essentially they considered it a victory. It emboldened the existing far left, and it spread the existing far left to the point where essentially, like, you can have this swarming women's march of no meaning and merit, and all of these women can, like, come out of the woodwork and say, you know, empty political slogans and act like they're going to change something when there's no unifying goal, there's no nothing. And that's like the standard thing. It happened with Occupy Wall Street. It continued on. It happened with certain protests, like the Kent State protest in the 70s, but it's been emboldened by recent actions, including the fact that essentially the elites have decided that it's okay to have, like, a black president who's also a leftist, because it can appease these people, because it can, you know, essentially get them to, like, side with the government as long as their representative party is in. So then they have to have the polarizer. They have to have somebody come in who's, like, very much the anti-Obama, who's not very kind, who's, you know, when he picks up babies, they cry, you know, the sort of evil megalomaniacal archetype of, you know, evil white capitalist, heteropatriarchal, blah, blah. And they have to have that because they had 8 years of the opposite. And the Democrats, they really did consider him the opposite, and a lot of that was because of his skin color, because he placated some people who said that presidents are and will always be white men, and this is the reason. And, you know, Republicans are evil, but Democrats are also racist. Well, let's get somebody in who's a Democrat who we won't call racist, because black people don't have power, and our bullshit racism equals race plus power paradigm ignores that. You know, so, I mean, I'm not saying that this applies to everybody, and I can certainly say that there's a certain amount of Democrats who will always be hard line and who will always support, you know, the Democratic candidate, even though Clinton bombed a Sudanese pharmaceutical factory and killed 30,000 people as a result. But, you know, let's brush that under the rug, because he did so many great things. You know, I can understand what you're saying. I just, you know, it became exacerbated. It's not necessarily the only issue, but it's certainly an issue that people don't look past race.
Right. Yeah. Like, and racism is the one that sticks right now. It's something that sticks to Trump for a lot of reasons. And yeah, few things make me want to defend Trump more than people criticizing him. Sometimes I have to work hard not to defend Trump, because I never want to defend him for anything. But it is super annoying when people say things are racist that obviously, or that actually they have no reason to believe that they're racist. They just make it up, as if calling a country a shithole is a racist thing to say. That's not racist at all. That has nothing to do with the skin color of the people in there. Why are you bringing race into it? And the only people that are bringing race into this equation are the people who are claiming that it's racist to call a country that where sewage flows in the streets a shithole.
Yeah, I mean, well, because there is some sort of xenophobia there, but to call it racist is to first claim that, like, the race is represented in those countries are monoliths. You could possibly say that it's racist because it's saying that white countries are better, but that's not only a stretch, but something you can't prove. And so, but these people are very used to making non-concrete statements, because it's easier to say that you're not represented well in office than it is to prove you're not represented well in office. I mean, the best way to say you're not represented in office is, of course, to be an anarchist, but, you know, and not to vote, not to participate in partisan politics. But once you say that you accept a bipartisan system of representative politics or representative politics at all, you have to accept the possibility that you'll lose. And, realistically speaking, a lot of these people just don't want to accept the possibility that they're going to lose occasionally, which, by lose, I mean not have their particular person selected by the elites. But by lose, they should at least understand that people can vote a different way than the way that they think, and that that's not a failing of those people, that's a failing of the system. You don't want racist power in office? Maybe just remove the office so that they can't be used for racist power, because it's not like you're going to get rid of these people. They're not going fucking anywhere. So.
Yeah. This conversation has led us to take up a lot more time than I thought. But you talked about, you had a conversation, I'm transitioning us. You had a conversation about where you talked to a bunch of status online. You brought up before the show, and you mentioned wanting to talk about status tropes, which I really is something I enjoy talking about, because I think they become almost funny after 5 years or wherever I'm at, not quite 5 years of being an anarchist. Some of the status tropes do. So why don't you bring up one or two, or bring up one, I guess, right now. We'll move on from there. That was repeated at you.
Double standards. I mean, really, that's the key status point. It's always going to be a double standard, because it's going to say essentially that anarchy has to have a perfect solution to a problem that exists right now under statism, that you could point to a huge amount of failings that the state has failed to properly address these problems. But, an anarchist has to come out with like the perfect solution. They have to come out with a solution that will always and universally solve this problem.
They usually want a monolith. Usually want a singular solution, a centralized solution, almost, to whatever particular issue they want. Like you're saying, right. They don't just want something that'll work in every community. They are thinking like a statist when they're talking about the kind of solution that they're looking for. The notion that to solve a singular problem, you might have many different solutions, even within the same geographical landscape, within the same relatively similar culture, that there might be multiple issues of addressing the same issue. The same issue in one community is kind of beyond them.
Where all these ideas can come out, but suddenly like the pluralism stops because it's anarchy. Suddenly anarchy, when you don't have a centralized ruler, suddenly you can't come up with a multitude of solutions and then just like have them compete for people's attention and money. You can't do that suddenly because there's no government, because these people have a functional fixation on like their particular idea of how society should be run, and anything that doesn't model that is not going to be acceptable to them, and in many cases and in many ways, certainly last night was no exception.
Just talking about what you're saying before, it is amazing how common it is for people to ask for an anarchist to come up with a hypothetical solution that they deem to be acceptable to them, really, as if they are the ultimate arbiter, to a problem that exists now that the state is trying to solve and failing.
Or that the state has actively created and therefore is not interested in solving.
Right, but to the statists, they can always just pretend the state is interested in solving it. And that's what the state wants to that's the message the state wants to get across to them, that they are trying to solve this particular issue. But it's an obvious failure what your solution is. But to them, just the fact that they can appeal to this organization that actually exists and is actually spending money and resources and time and energy purportedly to solve this problem, even just making the attempt, to them is enough to justify the state's existence and to render anarchy impossible. Or what?
Or like the hypothetical attempt they could make. not necessarily even what they're doing, but what they could do.
Yep. Yeah, like, that's true.
In my conversation,
you could just say government will
do it.
We'll just tax people.
Yeah.
No problem.
Well, I mean, because like in my conversation last night, for instance, I kept on bringing up things that you could do in an anarchist society, and their consistent response was to bring up how you could do it more effectively under a state. And I, you know, I would bring up that that's not how it's done under a state, that, you know, it would be very hard to maintain that, very hard to restrain the state down to that level. And to keep it, you know, essentially like a lapdog instead of like, you know, an attack dog attacking the people.
It's never a lapdog. You know, a monopoly on coercion, no matter how small it is never a lapdog to those who don't consent. And if everyone consents, then it's not a state.
Yeah, and the people who set it up, they don't have your interests at heart. The people with enough resources to set up a government want to protect their resources first. They're not out for you. There is no altruism. It's bullshit. What they're out for is their particular wealth being protected in their particular way. They're not interested in
their particular wealth being increased. This is the primary reason, I think.
Right.
And it's just the nature of the state. The state is not a productive organization. The state is a parasite, and production precedes the state's existence. Economic activity and growth must precede a state coming into being, because a state can only survive by taking on the economic growth that already exists, which tells you all you need to know, I think, about what the state is, even the smallest sort of state, that it's always an attack dog. It's always a form of predation on the peaceful, voluntary, and productive activity of individuals interacting economically.
Right. You know, and then of course anybody, like, this is the other major trope. Anybody who was raised in one of these statist societies, these people think they have this, you know, ironically Trump card that they can play whenever the anarchist that was raised in a statist society that exists in a statist society, you know, tries to find any fault in the system. They say two things. They say, you know, you've been using these resources, therefore you've signed the social contract, and you have to stay and support the system. You know, even though the use of those resources started when you were too young to be even able to, like, participate in field trips without getting your parents' permission. And, you know, even though those resources are compulsory anyway, even if you did have a better way of doing it, and even though those resources fucking surround you, like your ability to move, they say, because essentially you've been here, you owe people. And that's, you know, that's so fallacious.
To just say one more thing on even though those resources were all stolen, and therefore the government is an organization that is organization of thieves. It's a gang of thieves, and therefore they are not the rightful owners of anything. So you're not even using their resources. You're just using their stolen goods.
Right. You know, and but then they say, you know, well, if you don't like it, you can leave. To fucking where? Name me a place with no government that I could move to. And name me a way that I could do that without, like, paying the government huge amounts of my money, without packing up and leaving my loved ones, without, you know, sacrificing a shit ton. Name me a way that I could do that, you know, right? Like, so these people are essentially, really holding people hostage, and they're saying that unless you do things our way, you deserve nothing. You deserve nothing. You should just end yourself. You should go put yourself in an extremely harsh condition. Don't try to improve this place. Don't try to change it to the way you want it to be, even though that's the way representative shit generally is supposed to work, at least according to the propaganda. Yeah. You know, you should not be represented. Only we should be represented, and only we, the people who we like, not we, the people who might be, like, in the opposite party. It's never a matter of being reasonable. It's never a matter of them capitulating. It's always a matter of you capitulating because, hey, you know, if you don't, you might as well be with the terrorists.
Yeah, the premise of the if you don't like it, you can leave argument is that, or at least the backdrop, is that people think that it has something to do with consent, as if existing in a particular geographic region is consent to having a group of people threaten to kill you in order to take your property and to exercise ownership over your body and your property and force mm-hmm. you to obey your will with those things or else they'll murder you. Like, it's consent to being treated like that. I mean, and again with the double standards, if you try to apply that standard of consent consistently across all human relationships, everything is justified. I mean, their idea of consent would be like me saying to a woman, hey, if you don't move 150 miles outside of this particular zone that you're living in, then I am going to have sex with you. And then going over to her house and 6 months later being like, well, you haven't moved, holding her to the ground, having sex with her while she screams, no, 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 please stop. And then getting done saying, well, that was consensual because you didn't move. You can't do that. That's not consent.
Beating the shit out of your wife and saying that she used the resources you paid for and you know didn't leave, and so you can beat the shit out of her as much as you want.
Yeah, and that's if I was like a bank robber, or you know I mugged people for a living and did that. The resources I paid for, which really was never my money in the first place, or never my property. You know, it always belonged to my victims, who are impossible to really determine who they are.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Fuck the state. Fuck the state, you know, and fuck that twisted mindset that always wants to justify it. There's all sorts of, I think, internal, largely emotional and fear-based reasons, potentially despair, why people do that. And fuck that. Get some balls, people, or some ovaries, whatever the case may be. Or, you know, if you have all of them chopped off, just... don't be a coward. Have some moral courage, some integrity, some sort of a consistent application of the ethical principles that we all pretty much know to be true and just. Yeah, don't hit, don't steal. It's not that fucking complicated. You just apply that shit consistently, and you'll actually go from being kind of someone that advocates a monstrous treatment of your fellow human being to a really decent person.
Right. And of course, you know, you won't support this long entrenched system that essentially robs you in exchange for your personal sort of feelings of satisfaction and safety.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, insofar as people support that, they are some of the worst people in the world in terms of what they advocate. All right, dude, let's get out of here. I'm slamming my mouse against the table repeatedly, so you're welcome, audio listeners. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at JeremiahJM on Twitter. We will be back next week, potentially. I think I'm hoping that something more breaks on the FISA-related memo involving Obama administration, Hillary Clinton campaign, John McCain, spying on Trump and stuff. I kind of doubt that it will, for a lot of reasons that Harding would love to tell you about at some point. But I feel like that is a potentially interesting thing to talk about and deal with. I don't know. Sometimes it feels like we're always on the edge of having more information, and then we magically don't about a lot of things. We all know that.
And then, of course, well, they just lies are how the state keeps its power.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they just move on to something else and give you bits and pieces of nothing. They don't even have to justify it. They just talk about conversation has moved. I mean, what happened with Las Vegas? I don't know. No big deal. Now we're talking about government shutdown. Not a problem. All right. And Harding, you want to plug anything?
Check out my vlogs. I'll be on DTube. It'll be on DTube the day before. It'll be everywhere else, but then it'll be on BitChute, Minds, and YouTube.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Peace out, y'all.